Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. And by the way, for the game tonight, Four Nations Faceoff Final, of course, on Sportsnet TV at 5, Sat and Riccio hosting Canucks Central from 3 to 5 on location at Boston Pizza on Grandview Highway, doing some pregame, and then, of course, you'll be able to watch the game at Boston Pizza as well. And also, Halford and Brough hosting a watch party at the Hollywood Theater in Kits, and that's where I will be watching the game tonight. Very, very excited for that. They did a watch party there for, I think it was game 4 of the Canucks against Nashville, where it was just absolutely miserable from a Canucks perspective for like 58 minutes, and then they had the crazy comeback in the overtime. And the overtime win. So it was a blast then, and I think it's going to be a blast tonight. So lots of opportunities to get involved, get out, and watch this one. Again, Sat and Riccio hosting Canucks Central from 3 to 5 at Boston Pizza on Grandview Highway. Halford and Brough hosting a watch party at the Hollywood Theater in Kits for this one tonight. Now, we talked a little bit, right, about the, you know, the need for the game-breaking moments from Canada's top-end talent. We all know the names, McDavid, McKinnon, Crosby, etc. We also talked, though, about Seth Jarvis coming into the lineup. And go ahead.
I just want to note, there was a tweet from Haley Wickenheiser, just LFG, Yes. And it got me so hyped.
Haley Wickenheiser, man. Canadian hero, Canadian legend.
Let's go.
That's really all you need to say today, right?
Yeah.
Just let's go on a loop.
On a loop, yeah. A full hour of that.
Dudes love to just sit around and say let's go to each other in increasingly exciting voices before a big game.
Wow, do we ever. Sign me
doesn't
up.
Doesn't get better than that.
No, it really doesn't.
And by the way, Trish and Victoria texts in, amazing how you guys say this is going to be fun. Like 3 hours of cardiac arrest and possible death by joy or misery is fun. That's big game hockey, baby.
Before we came on the air, I said this game is going to be close. Yep. It's going to be a nail biter. It's going to be absolutely exhausting to watch. And I can't wait.
So let's talk. We talked about the top of the roster just a little bit. We can revisit that for sure as well. But we also mentioned Seth Jarvis coming in place of Travis Konecny. And, you know, we've seen Braden Point go up to the top six, Mitch Marner get bumped down. We've seen, you know, Konecny, Bennett, Jarvis all take turns out of the game at this point as well. And as you said, that kind of signals an intent to lean into the speed factor a little bit for Team Canada, bringing Seth Jarvis in. And I know, you know, going back to before the tournament actually started and some of our conversations, we were kind of looking at it and just the sheer speed and skill of the forward group and wondering, does the defense have the puck moving chops 1 to 6 to really support that and really help that? And now, you know, with Shea Theodore out, Travis Sanheim comes in his place. It is a big deal that they get Cale Makar back in. I mean, that one addition on the blue line makes such a difference for moving the puck and playing with speed. But how has your view evolved on how the defense and the offense are kind of fitting together, the defense and the forward groups, how they're fitting together for Canada at this tournament?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are some things about this roster, win or lose, that we'll look back on and kind of wonder about or discuss in the context of what the Olympic roster should look like in Milan next year. Now, that's going to be a very different tournament played on international ice. You're going to naturally want a different look and feel to the roster. Now, one thing I would say is a lot of second guessing in the assemblage of this roster focused on the defense, right? Evan Bouchard's omission.
Yep.
And honestly, in the wake of Canada's loss to Team USA, I think you could potentially have doubled down on it given what Thomas Harley looked like, right? I mean, should Canada have come to this tournament with like a bunch of Harley-like Mackenzie Weegar types, right? To sort of fleshing out their group as opposed to kind of a bigger, more specialized
and
defense
instead
corps.
Of like the Travis Sanheim, Colton Parayko.
Right.
But those are probably the two names we're talking about
yeah,
here.
100%. Yeah. Both guys have played well in my estimation, mm-hmm. but I think that's been a widespread discussion. Like, would you be better off with Bouchard, and on and on. Now, one thing I do think is notable from this tournament, like, you definitely have to bring Bouchard to the Olympics solely because we saw what happened to Canada's offensive venom on the blue line when Makar left the lineup, right? Yep. Like,
you need him as the Cale Makar caddy, the handcuff.
Handcuff, exactly right. Like, you don't want to not have an elite right-handed shooter for power play one and for your sort of tip of the spear off the back end offensively in the event that your best offensive defender goes down, right? Like, I think that's crystal clear coming out of this tournament. So whether or not the team intends on using Bouchard or whether or not he goes in like the Subban Dan Hamhuis role, right? Like, Bouchard needs to be on this team because you need to be able to put in the second most dangerous yep. right-handed shooter from the back end in the world, which is what Bouchard is. I'd love to have seen Canada try and construct like a five-man McDavid unit that includes him, given their chemistry too on high-low activity. I think that would have worked, but what have you. I would say that the way that the Americans approached and won that game, and especially that 25-minute segment in the second period where they were regularly able to establish and maintain zone time, right, which really took the bite out of Canada's rush attack, I think actually in some ways shows you why they were smart to go with some size on the back end, right? In terms of the size up front question, because I think that's the other, Tom Wilson's name is like hovered over this tournament.
Yeah.
I do think there's a truth there. I think people are asking the right question. I don't know that they're coming up with the right answer when they're okay. talking about Tom Wilson.
So what is it, a pure size question to you?
It's not a pure size.
I have a hard time looking at the loss against the U.S. and being like, Tom Wilson would have changed that result.
Correct. I agree. I mean, Tom Wilson would have maybe changed the result of
one of
the fights.
Yep.
and by the way, Tom Wilson is one of the smartest players to ever play the game. I don't know if people understand this, but Tom Wilson, in terms of his competitiveness, in terms of his mastery of the rules, in terms of how he knows exactly how far he can go, mm-hmm. like, he is a well-calibrated genius in terms of slanting the competitive environment on the ice. And that's something that really only the Tkachuks can match, right? Like, it's really Matthew and Tom Wilson are operating on a totally different level in terms of the game within a game factor. So I can see that. Watching that first game and thinking about that first game and thinking about tonight's game, for me, the size question hasn't been so much as like, it's too bad Canada doesn't have an answer for Brady and Matthew. It's been more that I worry that Canada doesn't have an answer for Matthew Boldy. And specifically what I mean by that is like a big bodied, super fast, skilled forward.
Sure.
Right. Or I'd add this, an answer to JT Miller. Like, JT Miller in this tournament is basically playing the old like Corey Perry, Jamie Benn role that Canada used to have, where it's like, yeah, our grinders happen to be 90-point guys. You know? Like, that's what Miller's doing. He's on the penalty kill. He plays more when they're leading. He's just kind of out there to be physical. He's a fourth liner on this team, but the fourth liner on this team is JT Miller, right? Yeah. Like, an incredible player. And it does feel a little bit to me like Canada doesn't have that big-bodied, star-level NHL forward who's sort of here to play a role.
Yeah, and like Sam Bennett would be the closest, but he's not in the same offensive class,
close as JT
Miller, but that's kind of the role he's there to play.
And that's awesome, but Sam Bennett's an elite second line center, right? Like, he's an elite second line center or low end first line center. You know, he's more Bo Horvat than JT Miller in terms of overall skill level. So I do think, looking ahead, you know, that like, where does Canada find their answer to Matt Boldy question for Milan, I do think requires a little bit of development. Like, I do think the next 12 months from Dylan Gunther
mm-hmm.
and Adam Fantilli is going to matter significantly if Canada is going to be able to go into Milan with, you know, without a size disadvantage against certainly Team USA, right? Like, at least one of those guys needs to progress to the level where they're on this team in a third or fourth line role. I guess Rick Nash would be the other example. We just don't have those like big bodied long forwards. And I thought you could feel that both in terms of when America set up the cycle, Canada couldn't kill it. And also the fact that Canada's forecheck didn't play at all against America.
I mean, you go back to the 2010 team. Like, that team was huge up front.
Massive.
Like, with Nash, Getzlaff, Thornton, Heatley, like, just up and down the lineup. Which just Stahl, Eric Stahl is a huge player. Like,
totally.
They were loaded up front in that regard. I get what you're saying. Like, I guess my thought is I haven't seen a lack of size cost Canada yet. Maybe it does tonight. Maybe, you know, an inability to get to the inside. And if you think that's what they need to do ultimately is kind of tone down the east-west passing and just play that dirty game and, you know, screens, tips, deflections, all that for Hellebuck, maybe the lack of size cost them. I haven't seen it cost them yet at this tournament. And if we are looking ahead a little bit to kind of, you know, roster building lessons, and of course, so much of that will be determined by what happens tonight, what they choose to take from it. I do think there's an element where you kind of just have to lean into the identity and the template of your best players. And their best players are Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid. And yes, Sidney Crosby, but also Cale Makar. So you kind of like, you can't completely sacrifice the toughness element and the size. And they haven't with guys like Bennett and Parayko and Travis Sanheim.
Hagel,
but I also think Brandon Hagel, but you also kind of like
the Hagel Cirelli point thing too. I think so. I think the new Canadian national identity is typified by the three Lightning players that Cooper brought, and people were sort of suggesting that, oh, well, Cooper, you know, made that decision out of loyalty or what have you. No, I think those guys just represent how Cooper thinks you have to win, which is with speed and absolute dogs. Like,
yep.
It's more about doggedness than it is about anything else.
Yes.
And I think that's,
and to me, I love
this new age Canadian national identity.
Like,
I'll love it if it works.
Travis Green used to call it hard skill.
Right.
Right. And I think that's exactly similar,
right.
getting to a similar idea where you need to have skill. You cannot sacrifice the skill, but you have to find the skilled guys who have, to use a ridiculous cliche, who have that dog in them, who have that fight. And that's why Canada made a big deal.
What's ridiculous about that cliche?
Well,
it's my favorite cliche.
It's just
ever.
Very, very cliched.
I know, but it's so good.
It is good. And that's why, you know, John Cooper was asked before the game, before this tournament, what's your team's identity? He said gamers and winners. And that's what he's talking about. It's,
yes,
it's the high skill, but it's the gamers and the winners. And ultimately, like, I don't care if you're 5'11 or 6'2 if you have that mentality. Yeah, in a perfect world, you'd have a bunch of 6'4 guys who also had that mentality and the high-end skill, but those players are very, very rare. So I have no problem with leaning into that element of Team Canada's identity. Shane from Surrey texts in, I'm hoping Team Canada rolls four lines and avoids some of the desperate line juggling we saw in the first game against Team USA. How do you boys view some of the coaching decisions by Canada in this tournament? I think moving Braden Point up with Connor McDavid is absolutely the right move. I don't necessarily want to see them roll four lines because I think you have to put your best players in a position to win this game for you and to be dominant. And that means a lot of Connor McDavid, a lot of Nathan MacKinnon. I think the difference between the first USA game and this game and how the coaching staff is going to approach it, one, obviously this is a must win, but second, that was the second game of the tournament. And so you're inherently still looking for chemistry, right? You're inherently, it's not panic line juggling. It's let's use this opportunity to tinker here in a short tournament and see if we can find some things that work. Now, if you're down late, if you're down in the second, late in the second or going into the third, and you think, okay, do we have to throw some new combinations out there? Yeah, that's what you got to do. But I think at least to start this game and until, you know, halfway through at minimum, they've got the combinations that can work. I wouldn't go as far to say roll four lines. I get that. You want to get your bottom six involved. But, like, I don't know how much we're going to see a Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand, Seth Jarvis line tonight, especially if the game's close. You got to ride with MacKinnon and McDavid and Crosby up front and Braden Point. The big question to me is, do we see, like, MacKinnon, McDavid, Crosby, MacKinnon, McDavid, Point at some time? Like, do we see MacKinnon and McDavid?
Please give me MacKinnon, McDavid, Point.
Oh, that would be so good.
Just for a bit. Just like here and there. Especially if the game script does not go the way we hope in the early part of this game. I'd love to see the fastest line in hockey history trotted out to play together. I also think, you know, when I was thinking about this after, like, ahead of the Finland game, but after the U.S. loss, I kind of thought, or wanted to see Point with MacKinnon more than with McDavid, because I felt like MacKinnon was playing a little bit more hero ball, right? And I thought maybe if you gave McKinnon a player skating his speed. Maybe you get a little bit more east-west from him, a little bit less of that, you know, Kobe hockey that McKinnon plays better than anybody. Don't get me wrong. Like, if anyone's going to do it, I want it to be Nathan McKinnon. But, you know, I also think you have to be wary if you're an elite downhill attacker of not leaving, you know, opportunities on the table in the buildup, right?
Right.
And not that I think McKinnon's done that too much, but I think there have been moments where he has. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's still, you know, I think there's still some chemistry finding in Canada's forward ranks. You'd rather that not be the case, but what do you expect in a four-game tournament? Like, that's a natural, especially with how long it's been since this team played best on best.
And I'll say this.
These players.
If it doesn't work tonight, Cooper and his staff, they'll face criticism. That's totally fair. That's how it goes in Canada. But I'll plant my flag now. Going into the game, I don't see anything like obviously wrong. You know what I mean?
Well,
I don't see any red flags where I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure about that. It's totally fine. It's totally appropriate. It should work. And in fact, I really like specifically the Braden Point adjustment.
I'd be pretty surprised too if Canada loses tonight, which is of course possible. They're slight underdogs on the money line. I do think it's going to be more about getting goalied than about, like, this team not performing well.
Yep.
You know, like, I think it's going to be more about Connor Hellebuck and maybe, hopefully not, but maybe about Jordan Binnington.
Yeah.
Than it is going to be about, you know, this team having made poor tactical choices or what have you. Now, inevitably, there's going to be some hand-wringing and second-guessing about that stuff, too. But I don't know. Watching this Canadian team attack off the rush, watching the speed with which they play, even rewatching this, you know, third period of the USA-Canada game, you know, there's not a lot out there that's, like, in error, right? It's like Doughty flubs that one pass to McKinnon that would have been a glorious chance, probably their best chance of the period. Hellebuck makes a stupendous save on a McDavid shot from the high slot, and Binnington allowed one rush shot goal that you'd want back, the Gensel goal, right? And that's the margin, right? Like, that's the margin in a game in which, frankly, Canada controlled the balance of scoring chances. So as much as all of these little things will matter, the truth is that the margin between these teams is going to be incredibly fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't look at the assembly of this roster or some of the coaching changes in terms of who's lining up where as being likely to be decisive.
No,
in this game.
I think it's totally fair
it's
to going to
be on execution
to mull over those things
totally.
After the fact, win
yeah.
or lose. Thank like we're in a new world now where we're constantly in an international cycle. You know what I mean? And we're going to have to adjust to that. So there's always going to be this, what are the ramifications for the next tournament? Who improved their stock? Who hurt their stock? How should they build the roster? Again, win or lose, that's going to be the case. That's all fair. But I agree with you, but there's nothing before the game that you can point to and say, this is brutal, this is bad, this is going to cost them. As you say, it's going to come down to execution. Jeff the Lumberjack from Langley says, who would you pick to be a game breaker in the Four Nations final? Now, we already talked about the top of the roster, so let's take out McKinnon, McDavid, Crosby, Makar, Braden Point here. Although I do think Sidney Crosby with another big moment. Like, I would not be surprised by that. Let's take those guys out. Let's talk about maybe the less likely heroes on the team. I got to go with the breakout star of the tournament, Brandon Hagel. Right?
Oh, that would be so
like,
sick.
To cap off his tournament, the fight, the quotes, the chirps with a big goal in this one. That's my pick for, I don't know, it's not unsung because it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, unexpected hero, unexpected game breaker, at least from a Team Canada perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I've been picking Point every game this tournament. I wonder about Sam Reinhart. I think Sam Reinhart
That's a good one.
Had a slow start to this tournament, but, you know, he's going to play with McKinnon, we expect, tonight. You know, Sam Reinhart
picked up a couple of points against Finland.
Yeah, and Sam Reinhart, I just think he's a really smart player. He wins a ton of battles. His size is going to be important. Like, he's not, you know, a traditional power forward, but he is an elite two-way player, and oftentimes what happens is it's actually just the smartest, sturdiest most regular puck battle winner that finds themselves in position to make the difference, especially in these tight checking, what we expect to be a relatively low scoring, super nervy affair. I mean, it's not a coincidence that he was the guy who got loose and scored the winner in game seven, right? Like, cause there's a little bit of Justin Williams to him. And I'm not saying there's a little bit of Justin Williams to him because he's quote unquote clutch. It's that he's always in position to make the difference in games because he's the smart player who wins all the battles and is always in the right position. I like betting on those guys.
I think about Jerome Iginla making the play off the boards to Sidney Crosby, right?
I often think about Jerome Iginla.
Oh, what a moment.
Let's just go to break
and watch that.
Yeah.
So good. Keep your texts coming in. There's a lot of interesting questions coming in about tonight, about the Olympic team for next year, who could feature in that. I think maybe at some point tomorrow we can do a big, like, who do we think should be on the Olympic team going into next year, maybe. Maybe with Dim we can get into that a little bit, but we can touch on it today as well. And keep your thoughts coming in. Who do you expect to step up and have a big game for Canada? Who's an unlikely hero in your eyes for the Canadian team as they take on Team USA in the Four Nations final tonight in Boston? And we will check in with Arda Ocal from ESPN. Of course, he's Canadian. He's working in the States. He works with Greg Wyshynski, who's a big Team USA hockey booster. So we'll get Arda's thoughts on the tournament, the final, what this could do for the growth of the game in the NHL south of the border, and a lot more going into the final tonight. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Strantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we are getting hyped for the Four Nations final tonight between Canada and the USA. Gets going at 5, or just after 5, I'm sure, for Puck Drop. Of course, you can watch it on Sportsnet in Canada. And now joining us, he covers the NHL for ESPN, but he's from Canada. Don't worry. He's on the Canadian side of things. He is Arda Ocal. Arda, how's it going?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me back on the show. You know, I appreciate being here. I thought I would start with this. I used to live in Yale Town for a year. I worked out in Vancouver. It was a wonderful time. And I grew up in Toronto. I know that the Vancouver Canucks fans listening right now have this as their most vested thing, with the most vested interest going into this game, that no matter who wins tonight, Canada or the United States, the curse will be broken finally, and a Toronto Maple Leaf will be a champion.
Well, not just that, right? Because either Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner, they have to win a big game. So that's crazy. They have to win a big game in Boston, no less. That's the really wild thing. They're going to get it done in Boston.
Every curse will be broken. Tonight is the night that all curses are lifted. They are exercised, and that's it. Now, this will be like the biggest "this is our year" conversation for Toronto moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're like, yeah, see, they proved they could get it done in Boston. We're golden from now on. So, Arda, I mean, there was obviously, I think, mixed feelings, certainly on this side of the border, from fans looking at this tournament before it got going, right? A lot of people kind of shrugging and saying, I don't really care. It's only four teams. It's not the Olympics. That's changed in a hurry. I think the quality of play, you know, there's a lot of things that have gone into that. How have you kind of seen interest take hold south of the border in your role at ESPN as this tournament's progressed?
Astronomical. This feels like somewhere in between the Stanley Cup final and the Super Bowl in terms of interest. South of the border, it really feels like people are either discovering hockey or rediscovering hockey, and it is like round the clock coverage on all networks, not just ESPN, but it really feels like it is a sports moment. It feels like it's a moment, period. And just strictly putting, like, focusing on the sport, I mean, even a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, right, he was in a game 7 of a Stanley Cup final last year, just months ago, and he won the Stanley Cup. And he celebrated with the Stanley Cup. And he said today that this is the most important game of his career. It might be recency, might be because he's in the moment and he's dialed in. But for him to even think that, for him to even say that, it just goes to show you how important it is for these players, and it's been the overwhelming sentiment among the players in this tournament that it matters. It is the utmost of importance for them to represent the colors of their flag, and we have seen that quality of play without a doubt in this tournament.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, this tournament takes on as much meaning as it's given by the investment of the people competing in it, right? And that's been so through the roof that we have no choice but to follow.
Absolutely. I do agree with, like, I do think that the drought, so, like, the fact that we've waited so long,
yes,
really helps the Four Nations tournament in particular. Like, I like the idea that next year we're having the Olympics, and then 2 years after that we're getting the World Cup of Hockey. And I even agree with Connor McDavid that once every 2 years is enough. Like, the fact that he was talking about how the toll that this has taken on all of the players and the injuries that we're seeing and how seriously they're taking, like, look no further than the injury reports. And the fact that a guy like Charlie McAvoy, like, I feel for him, guys. I really do. Like, he is missing out on a many people's most important game of their career in his home barn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just such an unfortunate circumstance for a guy like Charlie McAvoy, where this could have been, you know, a bucket list kind of item for him.
Yeah, it is, but it's also one of those things that, again, I think because the players are taking it so seriously, obviously everyone's disappointed for McAvoy, and, you know, we're hearing the Bruins are maybe a little upset about the medical treatment he was getting, but I haven't heard anyone say, well, and therefore we can't do these tournaments again, right? Because we're like, okay, that's part of it. It's hockey. It's a dangerous physical sport. There's always an injury risk, and I think what the investment of the players kind of just answers the injury question, which is, yeah, it's a risk, but it's one we're going to have to accept, and the players do accept because this means so much to them.
Yes, and you're absolutely right in saying, like, the fact that they're putting so much investment and so much care into it, that's contagious. We care even more as a result. We as hockey fans care. You two will care. I will care.
Yeah.
Because we want to see the best on the best. Like, we would have cared if nobody else cared, right?
Yes.
But everyone else is caring because these players are playing their hearts out, and we're finally getting to see Canada and USA. Like, here's the thing. This might be a little uncomfortable of a truth for my beloved Canadian fellow hockey fans to hear. In my opinion, I'm saying this is my opinion as someone who was born and raised in Canada and now has the perspective of the United States hockey/sports fan. In my opinion, the big positive for Team USA winning this game, if you're looking at it from a story perspective, not a country pride, I want Canada to win perspective, from a interest and story perspective, it would be enormous for Team USA to win this game and essentially be the team to beat, quote unquote, going into the Olympics. Because Team US, like, American hockey fans tend to love sports where they are the best. And Team Canada, Canadian fans, in my opinion, will cheer on their team because hockey will always be of the utmost importance in Canada. They will care about hockey. They will either care about Team Canada, the dominant team, or they'll care about Team Canada, the team that needs to reclaim their glory like in 2002. So I feel like Team USA winning from a storyline perspective will be certainly the best case scenario in the United States for interest, but also for hockey as a whole. This moment could live in varying degrees up until the Olympics.
So 6 weeks ago, I would have agreed with you and been like, yeah, you know, no matter what, hockey wins. But now there's a different connotation to this game, and it's vitally important that Canada wins. Sorry, bud.
I hear what you're saying from that angle. Yes.
Yeah. I will
from
say
that angle. I hear you.
America must lose.
Cause Arda, I know,
they must.
I know you're,
and they will.
Arda, I know you're a wrestling guy too. Right. And I feel like what you're describing is, you know, the money is in the chase, right? Like, the heel has to win so that the face can get the title back, can get their victory back. And that's what you're describing. The U.S. wins, and then everyone in Canada is so ticked off, but they get their rematch chance at the Olympics in a year.
Yes, and how I would have actually booked it is at the end of USA-Sweden, in the third period before the game ended, Canada runs out with the Money in the Bank briefcase and starts an all-out brawl at the end of Raw, to lead into this match.
Well, I think it's either that or like
some sort of Kachuk brother, like double team going well over the line, right?
But I think it's also, I think right. also the key would be a shady finish tonight, right? Ooh. Like a controversial game-winning goal for USA. So it's like, well, did they really win? But you know,
yes,
yeah.
You know what we need? We need a good old-fashioned 7-minute offside review.
That's what God.
In overtime. Fashion, like, just give me, tell me something good on the speakers in the arena. Give me, like, all the deliberation with the referees. We're all just waiting there for a good 10 minutes. Goaltender interference, whatever. Coach's challenge. Give me something at the end of the game.
See, I think it's important. One thing I've loved about this tournament, actually, is how at no point have we discussed the refs.
Yeah.
Like one great thing has been that at no point has refereeing, officiating decisions, an offside review, like at no point have we discussed anybody in we've discussed stars and stripes. We haven't discussed refereeing stripes. And I think that's been a huge win. I actually have decided, Arda, that I'm going to ride for what I'm calling like NHL style best on best, right? The World Cup of hockey over the Olympics for me, because I like NHL rules. I don't like ticky-tack calls in IIHF hockey. I don't like the idea that you could never have the Kachuk brothers and JT Miller, you know, fighting Hagel, Bennett, and Pareko over 9 seconds and have all six guys kicked out of the game in the Olympics. You'd never have that. Like in some ways for me, from a spectator's point of view, this is the best and actually better than what I expect to see on a bigger ice sheet under IIHF rules in Milan next year.
Dude, that's an excellent point, because all the perfect storm converged, right? The drought, the hunger, fans clamoring for it, first best on best men's USA-Canada matchup in a decade, and it was under NHL rules, so we could get that viral 3 fights in 9 seconds moment that we would not have gotten at the Olympics if that was the first time. I agree with you completely on that. Very quickly, the best ref moment of the tournament is the referee telling Brad Marchand to stop calling people pigeons. That was the best. That was the best moment for a referee in this tournament.
I also liked Brady Kachuk asking for feedback on the fights.
Yeah,
like wasn't that cool? Like that, yeah, obviously that was cool.
That's wrestling. How was my match? How was my comeback? Was it good? Did I sell well? Yeah, that was the best.
Speaking of, you know, like almost wrestling storylines in this tournament, it felt like we were going to get the one in the surprise Quinn Hughes re-entry to the tournament, coming to the rescue after Mike Sullivan dropped that bombshell on Tuesday. Now it's off. What did you make of kind of the Quinn Hughes curveball that wasn't this week for Team USA?
I think that's one of the rules that will be revisited in the World Cup of Hockey. I really think that I think it's silly that Thomas Harley was like looking like around the corner, like peeking around the wall, watching practice as if it was completely taboo that he was there in the event that Cale Makar wouldn't play, you know, like that's ridiculous. Like let the best play the best, let the teams invite whoever they want to invite. If Tage Thompson is on site for Team USA and they decide they want to play him over another player, allow that to happen. Like, I don't see a problem in that myself. In fact, it creates more for us to talk about, right? If you win, it's a genius decision. If you lose, well, why did you do that? Like, there's a lot of debate points to make. So in this situation, like, if Quinn Hughes was available and willing and ready to go, you know, like, I guess it created a storyline in the sense that Mike Sullivan maybe in the moment thought that Quinn Hughes was available, and then moments later we see footage of him practicing in Vancouver. Like, okay, we have something to talk about, I guess. But, yeah, that rule needs to change when we get to 2028.
Yeah, I kind of feel for the league, because you come up with these rosters, the PA prioritizes vacation time and breaks for the rank and file, and that seemed sensible. I don't think they understood, because I don't think we understood, and I don't know how anyone could have understood exactly how this tournament would unfold from a pace perspective. I don't think anyone thought that this pace would be like greater than playoff level intensity. And so, you know, yeah, well, we need one extra forward, one extra defenseman, that should cover us. You know, we don't exactly know what the dynamic's going to be on the ice. And then these guys are like literally going to war on skates.
Exactly. So if the rule, and listen, at the end of the day, I think the NHL did a great job organizing this tournament, and I'm certain they're going to look at it and make tweaks as they see fit and what might be an even better situation for all the teams. I'm sure they'll get feedback from all the organizations and decide on what they want to do. To me personally, if they bring three or four extra forwards and two or three extra defensemen and they have the liberty to be able to mix and match them as they want, is anyone really going to get upset at that? I'm not.
No. No, absolutely not. And especially, as Jarenth pointed out, right, I think a lot of this was about, oh, we don't want to bring guys for this tournament if they're not actually going to play. Is that fair to them? But the players have pretty clearly told us, yeah, they're into it. And, you know, one other thing that, of course, the NHL announcing before the tournament that they want to do the World Cup every 4 years starting in 2028. So it's alternating years with the Olympics. And, of course, both those events in February. And I think just from your perspective as a sports broadcaster in the United States, give us a sense of just how important this specific time in the calendar is, right? Because, you know, post-Super Bowl, pre-baseball, like we all saw the reaction to the NBA All-Star game and all of that. It does feel like because of the timing, the NHL has a pretty unique opportunity here to stake out a part of the sports calendar with a signature event like this.
Agree with everything you said, and I'll even go a step further. The NHL can own this block of time.
Yeah,
they could literally, as soon as the Super Bowl ends, college football will have already ended. It's basically the NHL and the NBA. And one of the narratives this weekend or the last several days has been the NBA All-Star game needs a revamp and Four Nations Face-Off is a home run success. And though we're not going to get it every single year, and I'm not sure if everyone understands that the All-Star game is returning next year for the NHL before the players go to the Olympics. But still, the fact remains that there's an opportunity for hockey, the NHL, to own this part of the year, this mid-November to before March Madness portion. And if big events go in that time frame, including the international tournaments, to me, that's the best possible situation and putting it in the best possible position to succeed.
Looking at the game tonight specifically, Arda, I mean, you know, it's easy to dial in on the goaltending factor, the discrepancy between Hellebuyck and Binnington. You know, obviously all eyes on McDavid and Crosby on the Canadian side. What are you watching for in the matchup tonight?
I hope that Canada gets like six power plays because I want to see. We only got 11 seconds, man.
Yeah.
We got 11 seconds of possibly the greatest power play ever assembled. Honestly, is it? Maybe Lemieux, Gretzky, Messier, Bork, and McGinnis Coffey, right?
Like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Ridiculous.
Except it's got 2D.
Like, this power play is insane, man. Like, yeah. this power play unit is like, who's stopping? Like, Sidney Crosby pulls out this, like, number one on the SportsCenter top 10 every single night kind of play. In 11 seconds, and you're just laughing as a Canadian hockey fan, like, oh, we're in for a treat now, you know? Like, and Makar back in the lineup, like, I think that on paper, the matchup favors Canada because they didn't have Makar last time, and McAvoy is out for USA. So, in that sense, but I don't know. I think USA had an amazing defensive game last game. Like, Canada just had trouble getting in for high quality danger chances, and they were out in the perimeter a lot. They were possessing the puck, but Team USA was just sound defensively. So I'm going to be watching that matchup for sure. And also, like I said, the power plays would be terrific for Canada.
The power play cross history comparison. The problem is it's like you bring McInnes and Coffey and, you know, whatever three forwards you want, Lemieux, Gretzky, Howerchuk, Lemieux, Gretzky, right? At the end of the day, you're still going to have 2D. Like, it's still going to be a wild amount of 80s-style point shots on the power play, which, you know, a contemporary Canadian goaltender is going to be like, LOL, way to waste a puck possession. That's the equivalent of a turnover, bro. Right? Like, it's just so different than the 1-3-1 that Team Canada is going to be able to roll out against, you know, 80s-style defenders. They're going to be like, haha, we're going to get a shorty for sure against this one defense. What just happened? They scored. It took 11 seconds. Oh, my God. So I think that's the reason that this is the best one of all time. Tactical innovation.
I tend to agree with it. It's tough to bet against this unit, man. It's unbelievable.
Arda, we really appreciate the time. And do you have, like, a bet going with Wish riding on this one?
Dude, I did one on Saturday, and I had to dress up with, like, this Uncle Sam hat.
Oh, no.
And a USA polo. It was the worst. I packed a Canada jersey, sweater, pardon me, in the case that Canada wins, so I could hand it to him live on the show. I'm not telling him I did that. I'm doing that. So I hope that that's the case for that purpose. But it's going to be fun, boys. Like, I'm buzzing, man. You guys must be buzzing, too. Like, this
oh,
is
yeah.
amazing.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the show has been us just saying, like, let's go back and forth to each other. We are very fired up.
If you want to join us, actually, let's do a round of let's go excitedly as before we let Arda go.
All right. Arda, you got a let's go for us?
I got a let's go. Let's do it.
Let's go. Let's go. Arda, that was awesome, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight, buddy.
You too. Talk to you guys soon.
That is Arda Ocal from ESPN. Proud Canadian, even though he was making the case for the growth of the game for USA winning there, but obviously proud Canadian as well. Fired up for the game. That is an interesting point about the power play dynamics from the 87, right? Because if you just look at it as a player resume perspective, and partly unfair because, you know, like Lemieux hadn't won cups at that point or whatever, right? So he had a chance to author his legacy after that. Gretzky, Lemieux, Messier, Bork, Coffey. I don't know if it was McInnes rounding it out, but whatever. Bork, Coffey, let's say. Like, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely, absolutely outrageous. But I think you make a good point about just having the value of having the four forwards. And you know how people often talk, like, in the NBA, right? Oh, what could this of amazing player have done in the three-point era? How many points could they have put up? Man, we never got to see, like, Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky in the 1-3-1 power play era, in the new generation power play era. Like, I'm not even saying, because their production was so outrageous anyway, I'm not even saying, like, oh, they would have put up more points. But it would have been cool to watch. It would have been way cooler to watch than them throwing it back to the point for point shots on the power play.
Yeah, power play in 87... So yep. the famous Lemieux Gretzky on a line with who was their other lineman?
Was it Howardchuk?
I think it was Howardchuk. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if he played power play in that tournament.
I think it was Messier. I can't confirm this, but I've heard this debate come up, and I believe it was Messier rounding out the power play.
Right.
Don't quote me on
didn't
that.
Didn't have a cutout scored on the power play by Rick Tocchet. Way to go, Mess.
Shout out Rick Tocchet.
Shout out Rick Tocchet. Yeah. So anyway. You look at that Team Canada and, like, you know, at the end of the day, too, the defense, it's like Craig Hartsburg, James mm-hmm. Patrick, Doug Crossman, you know what I mean? Norman Rochefort before my time. It's like Coffey, Bork, Larry Murphy.
Awesome.
Mike Gartner, right? And then, like, Gretzky, Lemieux, because they're so good. And otherwise, like, this version of Team Canada is just too much faster. Because the game's just changed too much, man.
Yes.
You know, like, if you just, like, took today's Team Canada back in a time machine, I'm pretty sure they win. Even if Lemieux and Gretzky are still the best players
yeah,
on the ice.
The problem with... So I think you're right, 100%. The question I always have with doing that comparison is, to me, the more interesting one is, like, Gretzky and Lemieux... And that cohort with today's training
and diet and
yeah, and totally. The support and the way we understand it. You know what I mean? Because you're absolutely right.
Well, Lemieux just, would be like nothing else we have in the game.
From a literal sense where it's like time machine back to 1987. This group is winning.
You're not prepared. You're not prepared when you meet Mario Lemieux in person for just how large he is.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, he is all of 6'5", 230, 240 pounds. He still dresses in a way that would make, like, Don Cherry blush if he saw a player arriving to the rink dressed like Lemieux. You know what I mean? Like, he's just so much more imposing. It's honestly, it's more like meeting an NFL linebacker than it is like meeting an average, like, retired pro hockey player. And he looks like he could still play today. So when I think about Lemieux in his prime, and I only saw sort of the tail end of it in the late 90s by the time I, like, really had an appreciation for it. But, you know. The level of dominance of anyone
ridiculous.
At that size, and especially if he wasn't showing up to testing day with a cigarette on his lip doing one push-up and telling them he's done. Right? Like, that, it's a totally different world today. What?
Yeah. No, you're right.
There's a lot of famous Lemieux stories.
If you equalize for the training and just how the guys approach it today, like, then I think it becomes a very interesting comparison.
One of the things too about Lemieux that we need more of in hockey was like the fact that he entered last for the Pittsburgh Penguins, right, when they were doing player intros, and in Pittsburgh they'd play Tina Turner's Simply the Best. So he had like an Undertaker style like walk-in music, you know? We need more of that in hockey. Like, that must have been so terrifying if you were like an average defender.
I don't know. Is it hard though for Simply the Best to be terrifying?
No, I don't think. I think it's very, very hard. I think you have to be very special. But like, once you are that special, you know, if you're like,
right.
I'm even thinking about like Ken Klee was like a top pair defenseman of that era.
Yeah.
But like, you come in with an undermanned team, you're Ken Klee, you're like, I'm going to be chasing this guy around for 20 minutes tonight. Like, damn it. Must have been so awful.
Yeah, that would not be fun. By the way, Mario Lemieux, 18 points in 9 games at the Canada Cup in 1987. So pretty good. Pretty, pretty good. All right, we will continue our look at the Four Nations face-off final between Canada and the United States tonight in Boston, 5 o'clock. We're hyped for it. And as I mentioned earlier, Canucks Central with Sat and Riccio going from 3 to 5 at Boston Pizza on Grandview Highway today. So you can go down there, say hi to Sat and Reach, get a beer, watch the game afterwards at Boston Pizza, and Halford and Brough hosting a watch party at the Hollywood Theater in Kits. So we've
fun.
We got East fan covered. We got West fan covered. You've got options if you want to be around Sportsnet 650 people watching this game tonight and having a blast watching with a bunch of fans. Get your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance, live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And lots of thoughts coming in tonight. Or today, I should say, about the game tonight. Jeffro says, Canada's top guns have been scoring. The Americans have not. Canada's winning this thing. Let's go. Jeffro is fired up. Lots of questions, though, also about kind of the future of best-on-best hockey, lessons for Team Canada, all of those things. RAF in the sewer says, Drance and Jamie, do you think Canada should start hosting Team Canada training camps every year for our top players to help integrate them, get them on the same page, playing together, and to build chemistry? Well, I remember back to certainly in the 2010 cycle, but I think in the other Olympic cycles where players were going as well, Team Canada would host, I think like in August or maybe very early September, a mini training camp for like 40 guys or something. So kind of the long list candidates to be on that year's Olympic team coming up in February. That's something they did. You know, you go to Calgary or whatever, 3 or 4 days. And it was a big deal. And I do think one of the things I'm really excited for about the NHL's proposed plan to kind of get finally, really for the first time, establish a regular permanent best-on-best calendar every 2 years in February is that we have a chance to kind of build up this institutionalized factor a little bit more how it's reflected in soccer, right? In international soccer,
right,
where there are these, okay, regular chances to check in and see like, oh, who's gotten on Hockey Canada's radar? Who gets invited to that summer camp? Do we learn things coming out of it? It's going, I think, and I hope, to become something that we can kind of follow year round more than we have been able to, obviously, over the last 10 years. But I think you're going to see more of that kind of regularity built into it. And I even think, you know, tournaments going forward, right? Like, we talk about the taxi squad. Well, let's say you're a young player and for the 2028 World Cup, you're invited to be on the taxi squad. You know, that could be a big deal for your Olympic participation next year. So I think it's going to kind of work out that there is not a permanent national team or anything like that, but it's going to become closer to that with these regular training camps, regular chances to participate, and just kind of the stock watch thing being a big part of following hockey.
Well, and then you, yeah, and that's all gravy, by the way, like fun to talk about, so fun good. To think about, fun to see. And then also there's benefits to the national team. Like, remember Bergeron and Crosby?
Yeah.
Just like, you know, in our mind's eye, it was like a fourth line center and our single best player. You know, certainly in 2010, like Bergeron was on the 2010 roster as a reserve, right? But by 14, they built that chemistry. And then when they won the World Cup, it was like you had the perfection line with Crosby, which was nasty because you had Marchand there too. And there's sort of still a legacy of that on this roster, even though Marchand is far more of a bit player. Honestly, I even think his performance warrants, but then certainly he was in 26, 9 years ago, obviously. I mean, time is cruel. But the, you know, so you saw like players build chemistry and teams find things, right, in terms of what they could rely on or what they could do or how they'd build a team. And I think that's a fun part. That's a good part of this that'll come from having these regular tournaments. Like there's something, you know. Maybe it's Crosby McDavid, or sorry, maybe it's Point McDavid.
Mm.
Like maybe Point McDavid is something that matters again
that
at the Olympics.
That
matters
in 2028 and stuff. Right. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Like maybe the Canada's found like, okay, we've got these two guys. They seem to have chemistry, and that becomes a staple of our international hockey watching experience over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great. Like, I am so, so here for that conversation and the ability to just track and monitor these things. I think it was like, was it Joe Thornton and Rick Nash who had kind of a similar dynamic as well?
Yeah.
Now, and that went back to their days. I think they played a season in Switzerland
right.
together and during the lockout.
And, you know, early in their careers, they played a lot of Worlds together too.
Yeah. But again, that's Worlds, right? So
totally.
It's, you know, they had that chance for repeated international play to build that chemistry. And it lasted through a bunch of tournaments for them.
Although I still remember Taves Rick Nash, right? Like in my head,
that's
Taves,
where it went. Yeah,
Taves Rick Nash was Taves Nick, Rick Nash and Mike Richards for me might be like the most dominant two-way line in my memory watching Team Canada hockey.
Because I think at the Vancouver games, at least they started with the Sharks line of Thornton, Marleau, Heatley.
Yeah,
I think,
then quickly moved to that Rick Nash, and you know that was the line in the Gorillas game that just completely.
Mm-hmm.
Ran roughshod over a very hyped Team Russia. And, you know, from there, Canada won the tournament.
Yeah. Remember Shea Weber shooting the puck through the net?
Yeah.
Oh,
Shea Weber was so sick.
So
dude.
Great. That's one of my favorite moments all time as a hockey fan. Like, just the sheer buzz and adrenaline of a guy shooting the puck through the net as you're blowing out a rival. Oh,
and at the
what
time,
a moment.
And at the time, we all still believed that Shea Weber was eventually coming to Vancouver.
That's true. That's true. It was like, future Canuck Shea Weber!
Like, I can't wait to root for this guy.
One of the great all-time future Canucks, Shea Weber.
Well, it almost happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He was one of the great all-time future Canucks.
If not for the lockout. Like, if not for the dynamics of the lockout, I think it happened. I think it would have happened.
Now, Ryan in Black Creek texts in, with the need for big-bodied fast forwards already discussed for Canada, do you think Bedard cracks the Olympic roster next year with a strong NHL campaign finish this year, first half next year? And Kevin from Traffic also asks, are Bedard or Celebrini on the Olympic team for next year? And again, that's part of this, like what I think is a really fun, exciting part of this conversation is to, okay, we've had these two stud first overall picks. Bedard certainly looked at as generational at the time of his draft. How quickly do they knock the door down and force themselves into the national team picture? The discourse around Connor Bedard has kind of gotten off the rails,
yeah,
I think, a little bit
way
here
off the rails.
In this second season. People are very high on Macklin Celebrini.
They should be.
I think it would be, I think I would characterize both of them as outside chance guys right now, but definitely with a chance. Like, definitely there's enough hockey to run between now and whenever Team Canada names their roster for the Olympics next year that they can do enough to make their way in.
Yeah, I mean, look, these guys are outrageously good.
Yeah.
Just so, so, so good. You know, with both guys, you're talking about guys who are, you know, 0.89 point per game guys as teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So the upside of that is
enormous,
ridiculous. You know, I think the truth is that that's another thing to remember, regardless of the outcome tonight, right? Which is that, you know, it's not like other countries have multiple guys like this coming.
Multiple first overall picks, yeah.
Multiple first overall picks who are this good right away. Yep. You know, that's just ludicrous stuff from both of these, you know, Vancouver-based gentlemen. And, you know, I think they are... Like, I think they're, look, it's going to be tough because the environments that they play in aren't great, right? They're not going to have like a playoff run to demonstrate their maturity. They play center. They play positions in which Vancouver, Canada has, you know, doesn't have significant needs, right? Like, let's be real. There's a lot of competition. It's not like one of them is a right-handed defenseman. You know what I mean? They're centers. Well, this team's going to have 10 centermen. Like, there's a lot of competition for those roles. I think they can get there, but I think certainly they're going to have to level up pretty significantly.
And that is going to be an interesting part of not just for those two players, but kind of the international Team Canada discussion going forward. How, like, to what degree does NHL playoff success become a prerequisite? And I think there's a good element of that, and John Cooper has stressed it, right? Winners and gamers, as he said, there's a good element to that. There's also a way to take it too far. You know what I mean? And to be leaving talent at home just because their NHL situation hasn't been ideal for the long playoff runs and all of that. I think it'll be a very tough one for them to crack next year. But never say never with players as talented as that, right? And, you know, they'll have to do something special. But I think then you look ahead to like 2028 and that becomes much more realistic. And then you start to really hope that you're turning the national team over to that kind of next generation of talent. Brandon in Vancouver says, who is the next upcoming great Canadian D-man, though? It feels like the USA has a major advantage there still. And I know, you know, you were saying, what, looking ahead to 2027, the Landon DuPont draft, and certainly a lot of justified hype.
And a Canadian defenseman appears to be probable to be the first guy taken this year. You know, you've got a lot of young talent in this league. Among Canadian defensemen,
I wouldn't write off like Owen Power yet as a guy who can contribute at the international level for Canada.
No.
I'm not saying bank on it, but this is still, you know, a 6'6", 22-year-old who was the first overall pick a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not writing it off, you know,
just needs to get some work done in terms of his puck skills. But yeah, I mean, I agree with that. You're right. So there was another first overall pick Canadian defenseman pretty recently here. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm miffed by the idea. Like, three of the top five point getters among defensemen are Canadian: Morrissey, Shea Theodore, and Kale McCarr. Right? Theodore got hurt early in this tournament, so he's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. But he would have had a huge impact.
He's
on this team. He's incredible.
Such a good player. He would have been a huge part of the team.
Four of the top six are Canadian. Now, only four of the top 10, because Lane Hutson, Adam Fox, Hughes, Werenski. So Canada and the U.S. tied. And then the other two are Swedish, Victor Hedman and Rasmus Dahlin. But, you know, like, Dougie Hamilton's not on this team, right? Mackenzie Weegar's not on this team. You know, Thomas Harley, I mean, we just saw Thomas Harley, like, absolutely crush it. I've seen some takes that I think are pretty interesting about how, like, from 2018 through 2021, effectively, like, the drafts didn't produce Canadian stars.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in the 2018 draft, you get, the Americans anyway, get Hughes and Brady Tkachuk out of that draft class. Canada gets Evan Bouchard. Noah Dobson's another guy who's not at this tournament for Team Canada, but would absolutely be capable at this level, I think. You know, the 2019 draft's kind of similar. The Americans get Hughes out of that draft class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like Bowen Byram.
Yeah, you look so
Alex Turcotte.
The 2019
didn't really
one is really interesting, right? Because Jack Hughes taken
first overall.
They get Matt Boldy in there as well. A guy like Cole Caulfield, who's not on the team but easily could be at the Olympics. And then you look at the run of, you know, Bowen Byram, Kirby Dach, right? Like Dylan Cousins. The guys from Canada who haven't taken that jump and established themselves as realistic options at a best on best.
Yeah, and then, you know, 2020, right? The two Canadians off the board first, back to back, in Lafreniere and Byfield. Neither have really hit their apex.
Although, again, I wouldn't rule those guys out. Not for the Olympics next year, but like for 2028 to be a part of it.
Byfield on the wing with size could be like another answer. I mean, he's been so disappointing this season offensively that he's sort of fallen off my radar when I'm talking Fantilli Gunther. But yeah, and you know, I wouldn't put it's not like Cole Perfetti, right, can't eventually contribute. Seth Jarvis comes from that draft class. Dylan Holloway is another guy with speed and size that would be an interesting option potentially down the line if his development path continues. But, you know, in that draft class, for example, the first defenseman off the board is Jake Sanderson. Well, he's going to play tonight. And by the way, I think he's really, really good.
Yes.
And the first Canadian defenseman off the board is Jamie Drysdale. He didn't really hit. So like 2018, 2019, 2020, there's been like this gap where America added a bunch of elite talent and the Canadian guys just haven't developed into superstar level players the way their draft pedigree sort of might have suggested. Now, I do think that, you know, like Matty Beniers in 2021 has been disappointing from the American side. Like, you know, there looked like a minute after his Calder Trophy winning season, like the Americans had like a mini Matthews coming in addition to what they currently have. You know, you sort of look at that class. Luke Hughes has been good, not great, right? Matty Beniers has sort of flatlined in terms of his development. Owen Power kind of has been unimpressive. Mason McTavish has taken a step back this year. But, you know, guys like Dylan Gunther and Kent Johnson are certainly trending in an interesting way for Team Canada, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this ebbs and flows. I think the truth, though, is that
Wyatt Johnston, another one to have in there.
Yeah, the truth for me remains that between Bedard and Celebrini, for example, as like good examples, it's like those are elite talents. Well, those are higher upside talents than any other country has under the age of 20 at the moment.
And I think there's a reason Team USA is talking about this as this is our moment, right? Like, there's a bit of a golden generation thing going on here for Team USA. Now, a lot of these guys are young. That it's not as if this is going to be the only opportunity they have, right? You know, Quinn Hughes isn't even there. He'll be a factor, obviously, for the Olympics in 2028. And Matthews and Jack Hughes and Adam Fox and Werenski, you're on the list. Like, the golden generation could last for a little bit here, but it does have that feel of a golden generation. And if you're concerned, which I think it's fair to be, about that little blip in the pipeline for Canada, you make a really good point where you look at the last couple of drafts and just because this is what ultimately we're talking about. As you said, you can only put 20 guys on the roster, so your 20 best players or your 13 best forwards and your 7 best defensemen, that's who you need to be really, really good. And at the very, very high end, Canada is still producing those players, at least at skater. We'll see about at goalie as things continue here.
So while we've been chatting, I've been trying to build a data set to get some context.
All right.
Of course. But yeah, I mean, I like to just gut check it against hockey history. So Bedard and Celebrini at 0.89 points each as teenagers to this point in their NHL careers. So I've put the following parameters on my search. You have to have played at least 40 games, because there's a lot of guys who come in and play like 10 games and go nuke, right? You have to have debuted after 1990.
Okay.
So we're looking at 35 years of hockey history here. You have to have scored more than 0.85 points per game as a teenager who's played 40 games and since 1990. So that's my data set.
Okay.
Both Macklin and Connor Bedard both come up in this data set. Do you want to guess how many players come up in this cohort?
12.
10.
Woo!
10. Number one, the leading teenage scorer of all time is?
Connor McDavid.
Sidney Crosby.
Oh, okay.
1.39 points per game. Sid.
Really good.
Number two?
Connor McDavid.
No, it's Eric Lindros.
Oh, man.
Now, number three.
Oh, Eric Lindros.
Number three, I'm going to let you get it right.
Connor McDavid.
There you go.
There we go.
Number four, Connor Bedard. Maybe we've been a little too harsh on Connor Bedard given that list.
Yeah.
The only teenagers who have outscored him as teenagers in the last 35 years are McDavid, Lindros, and Crosby to this point. Now, he's actually tied in points per game with Macklin Celebrini. So Celebrini's fifth. And the list is fleshed out by Patrick Kane, Steven Stamkos, Jason Arnott, Patrick Laine and Anze Kopitar.
Some pretty good players. Some downside scenarios there as well. Patrick Laine.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But some very, very good players at the top of that list.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, here's what you got to hope for. You got to hope that these guys get a chance to play some winning hockey. You got to hope that these environments improve pretty rapidly and that these players are a big part of why, right? You hope that San Jose and Chicago go out and be aggressive in free agency, right? I mean, like we've been talking about Brock Besser, right? A fair bit in terms of his contractual situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you love Brock Besser as a player. He makes so much sense for the Canucks to keep, but does it give you a little bit of a second thought if you're talking about $8.5 million times 8 years? Well, it should give the Chicago Blackhawks zero thought, right? Like Brock Besser with Connor Bedard, it's like a guy who you know can hold up at the top of the lineup,
mm-hmm.
a guy who you know can help on the power play, a guy who can tell Bedard some little things like, oh man, this is what I learned from JT Miller about being a screener. This is what I learned from Tyler Toffoli about how to make plays down low, right? Like, is a guy that Bedard has like grown up watching, right? Would immediately have authority. Like, those are the types of moves that Chicago needs to be really strongly considering.
I do wonder also the effect on player priorities, because again, to make use the international soccer comparison, right? One thing you see with a lot of guys is like, hey, my minutes are down at my club, but I want to play at the World Cup. So like, I need to go somewhere where I'm going to play. You know what I mean? Or I need to go somewhere where I'm going to be in the Champions League, so I get people watching my game and seeing my game and I show that I can play. Like, it becomes part of the player's consideration to go somewhere that's going to give them the best chance to stand out and be a part of their national team. And I'm not starting to talk, trying to get the Bedard and Celebrini out and to Vancouver conversation going here, but it is an interesting wrinkle. It's like, if you think your club situation, your NHL team situation is costing, meaningfully hurting your chances of representing your country now with international play, like that could be a really big deal for some players making decisions going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're dead on. So no, I think the world we live in from an international hockey perspective is about to rapidly shift with the oncoming of regular games. Yep. And I think that's a great thing for fans, and I think it's a fabulous thing for players.
I honestly think it's phenomenal. Like, I
advertisers,
so good.
Anyone who makes their money in and around this business,
anyone who has to talk about hockey during the summers,
yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, and all the more reason for Canadian independence to remain, because no one wants to see some like actually, I've always dreamed that it would be cool at some point for Canada
to a province.
Yeah,
that would be sick.
Even if you had to do like team maritimes,
yeah,
or like even if you had to combine a few, you know?
So you do like prairies, maritimes, Quebec, Ontario, BC, that's at five.
But Alberta, you could have your own Alberta team.
Yeah.
And honestly, you could have your own Manitoba team, and you could pretty much have your own Saskatchewan team. I really think you just need to combine
the maritimes.
I think so, because and they'd have like the sickest top line, right? But things get a little thin pretty quick when you really model out the lineups. But yeah, I mean, we all need to see this, don't we? At some point, we need to see this.
That would be pretty awesome.
That tournament though would be a no hitter. Maybe
we can, like, if there's and heaven forbid, but if there's like an NHL lockout or something again sometime,
like a barnstorming
just
tour,
need to get, like some reps in. We can organize that.
Oh, that'd be amazing. The PA should be on this. No, people would, especially if you were playing it at, if you were playing it like in and around places that don't usually get to see NHL games.
Yeah, but so you're still going to Saskatoon or something.
Exactly,
yeah.
But still have like pretty close to NHL code buildings with a little bit of investment. I mean, I don't know. People would tune in for that.
Oh, absolutely. That would be incredible.
Yeah, do it like 2067.
It would feel so relaxed too. The stakes. It's like, oh no, I'm gonna get chirped by Albertans. Like, yeah, whatever. That's fine. Like the stakes of that compared to tonight, it would be nice. It'd be a nice change of pace to just have the relaxed stakes for that one going in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty amped for the raised stakes of tonight, to be
I'm
honest
amped,
with you.
But it's nice to have the change of pace sometime as well.
Also, based on the Mighty Ducks rule. Okay, the winner of Canada-US has to face the real world power of international hockey. It's Iceland.
Oh, Iceland.
Greenland. Another. Wow, you've really got annexation on your mind, bro.
Well, I only remember them describing the Greenland as ice and Iceland as nice. And I was like, I can't remember which country they come from, though. I can only remember that rhyme. That's the only thing that stuck out for me from that movie.
Fair enough.
All right. We will end things there. This was a really fun show. Obviously a little bit different than what we normally do, but thanks for everyone texting in, getting hyped with us. It should be a blast. We're just over 3 hours from puck drop. As I mentioned, Sat and Reach with Canuck Central at Boston Pizza on Grandview Highway 3-5 leading into the game. You got a Halford and Brough watch party at the Hollywood Theater in Kits going for tonight's game. So it's going to be awesome. Have fun. Enjoy yourself, and we will be back here tomorrow to break it all down, to react to one of the biggest hockey games in a long time tomorrow on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.